Osho, The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 6, Discourse Number 9.
Bhagwan, let go of anger, let go of pride. When you are bound by nothing, you go beyond sorrow. Anger is like a chariot careering wildly. He who curbs his anger is the true charioteer. Others merely hold the reins. With gentleness, overcome anger. With generosity, overcome meanness. With truth, overcome deceit. Speak the truth. Give whatever you can. Never be angry. These three steps will lead you into the presence of the gods. The wise harm no one. They are masters of their bodies, and they go to the boundless country. They go beyond sorrow. Those who seek perfection keep watch by day and night till all desires vanish. Listen, Atulya. This is not new, it is an old saying. They blame you for being silent. They blame you when you talk too much and when you talk too little. Whatever you do, they blame you. The world always finds a way to praise and a way to blame. It always has and it always will. But who dares blame the man whom the wise continually praise? Whose life is virtuous and wise, who shines like a coin of pure gold. Even the gods praise him. Even Brahma praises him. Beware of the anger of the body. Master the body. Let it serve truth. Beware of the anger of the mouth. Master your words. Let them serve truth. Beware of the anger of the mind. Master your thoughts. Let them serve truth. The wise have mastered body, word, and mind. They are the true masters.
The first sutra. Let go of anger, let go of pride. When you are bound by nothing, you go beyond sorrow. The most important thing to be understood is that Buddha is not saying repress anger, repress pride, and he is not saying drop anger, drop pride either. He is using the word let go of anger, let go of pride. The key is in the word let go. There are people who are full of anger, possessed by anger, possessed by pride. They are insane. Insanity is the climax of pride and anger. And there are people who are afraid of anger and pride, hence they repress them. But a repressed insanity is far more dangerous. because it accumulates. Then you are sitting on a volcano. It can erupt any moment. It will destroy you. It will destroy others who are related to you. It is poison. If one has to choose between the two, expressing or repressing, then expressing is far better, because at least the poison never accumulates. It is thrown in mild doses, homeopathic doses. But if you accumulate, it is no more homeopathy, it becomes allopathy. Then the doses are big, and sooner or later your repressed anger will be so much powerful that you will not be able to keep it repressed anymore. Then it simply explodes, and you are absolutely helpless. Humanity has been taught by the priest, the politician, the pedagogue down the ages to repress anger. The society is not concerned with you. The society is concerned only with your outer appearance. What happens to your inner world is nobody's business. Whether you suffer, you live in hell inside, that is left to you. Just keep a beautiful appearance, learn etiquette, behave in a cultured way, and if you are carrying a hell, that is your problem. But the person who is carrying a hell within, howsoever he becomes cultivated, sophisticated, cultured, remains a wild animal within. Scratch him a little bit, and his humanity will disappear, his character will disappear, and you will find just the opposite man inside. That's what happens when somebody drinks too much. A very cultured man, once he is intoxicated, he starts being very uncultured. That is his truer self. Alcohol has not created it. It has only removed the barriers. It has only removed the rocks that were repressing it. In the East, there has been a secret tradition of tantrikas who go on practicing meditation, and side by side they go on taking drugs in greater and greater amounts for a certain reason. They are not interested in drugs, they are interested in meditation. But they go on increasing the amount of the drug slowly, slowly, so that they can remain alert with the drug. It takes a long time. It is a very subtle process of awakening. In the hands of the fools, it will be destructive, it will be suicidal. Hence it is a sacred tradition. Only the master gives it to the disciple, and very rarely, if he finds some disciple of such integrity, then only he gives this process. Meditate and go on increasing the amount of the drug so slowly that it never overpowers you and your watchful remains intact, but the drug will start removing all rocks and it will bring up all that you have repressed down the ages in your many lives. Watching it, you will be allowing it to disappear. That is the magic of watching. If you watch something, either it is going to disappear totally from your being, or it is going to be dissolved into your being. If it is something natural, spontaneous, it will be dissolved into your being. That too is beautiful. If it is something not part of your being, extraneous, has come from the outside, is a parasite on you, it will evaporate. The real definition of good and bad can only be this. The good is that which grows with meditation, watchfulness, and the bad is that which disappears as you grow in watchfulness, as you grow in awareness. Awareness has to be the decisive factor. When you become aware of your anger, there happens a let go, because anger is not part of your natural being. Neither is pride. They start evaporating. As the sun of awareness rises in you, they start evaporating like dew drops in the early morning sun. And the second thing to remember, Buddha makes these two statements together. Let go of anger, let go of pride. Why? There is a reason. Pride is ego. I am superior. I am holier. I am greater. I am something special. I am. Ego is the root cause of anger. If you think you are superior, higher, holier, special, you will be constantly angry, because the world is not going to accept it. In fact, everybody else also thinks in the same foolish way. And when there are so many great people, conflict is bound to arise. And everybody is trying to prove that I am greater than you. How can you avoid conflict? And that conflict brings anger. It is ego hurting. It is ego feeling the wounds. It is unsatisfied ego that creates anger, and nobody's ego can be satisfied. That is impossible. Even a man like Napoleon cannot feel his ego absolutely satisfied, for the simple reason that he was not very tall. Only 5 feet 5 inches. And that was always heavy on him, because he had many servants, guards, who were very tall than himself. And whenever he will see a tall person, he will become angry. he will not be able to control himself. The great Russian leader Lenin had very small legs. The torso was bigger. His upper body was bigger. His lower body was very small, disproportionate. That kept him always angry. Even if somebody had looked at his feet, and which was natural, because it was so disproportionate, that anybody will become aware, and he will become angry immediately. Anybody looking at his feet will create anger. He used to sit on a big chair, so big that his feet won't touch the ground. So nobody can think that he has small feet. But people had become aware of his big chair. So they will look more closely, and that will create again anger, because they will see that his feet are not touching the ground at all. Now, to be the dictator of the greatest country in the world, Soviet Russia, the largest country in the world, and yet feeling hurt for a very stupid reason that you have small legs. You cannot have all and everything. You can arrange to have few things, but few other things will be missing. You may be tall, but you may be ugly. Any small thing is enough to hurt the ego. You may be very tall and very handsome, but unintelligent. You may have a very mediocre mind. You may have a very intelligent mind, but a very ill body. You may have a very strong body, very good physique, but you don't have any intelligence. You can't manage all. You may have intelligence, beautiful body, but no money. The world is vast, and there are thousand and one things, and nobody can manage. Nobody has ever been able to manage all. And the ego is bound to be wounded. And the ego is very sensitive, very fragile. Because it is very false. It is ego that creates the space in which anger arises. Hence Buddha says, let go of anger, immediately adds, let go of pride. Because unless you let go of the ego, you will not be able to let go of anger. Anger is a byproduct, and one has to see very clearly the causes of things. Your mind are so jumbled up in such a mess, you don't know what is the cause and what is the effect. A woman used to come from the far away village to the city each year to give birth to a child. When she came for 17th time, the doctor said, "We always wait for you. You are the only one we can depend upon that each year you will be here. When you will be coming next year?" She said, "I am not coming anymore, because just now we have discovered what is the cause of it all." 17 children, and they have just discovered the cause of it all. She said, "I am not coming anymore." But that too is early. You may have lived thousands of lives and you have not yet been able to find the cause. Why this anger? Our minds are in such a mess that you cannot make any head or tail of it. You cannot sort it out. Everything is so mixed with everything else. Causes pretending to be effects, effects pretending to be causes, things which are not related at all have become accidentally associated with each other. Betty Ann Grove, the singer, switched on her radio one morning and tuned in on two stations at once. One broadcasting calisthenic exercises and the other giving out cooking recipes. Here is what she heard. "Hands on hips. Place one cup of flour on your shoulders. Touch your toes and mix them in one half cup of milk. Repeat 6 times. Inhale 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder. Lower the legs and mash 2 hard-boiled eggs. Exhale into a bowl and breathe naturally. Lie flat on the floor and roll in the white of an egg until it comes to a boil. In 10 minutes, lift your head from the fire and scrub briskly with a rough towel. Bend your knees, shake powdered sugar on them, and serve with fish soup. And your mind is tuned to so many stations, not two. All kinds of things are going on inside the mind. Just one day sit down and write whatsoever is coming into the mind. And don't cheat. Just exactly write whatsoever comes on. And you will be surprised that this is your mind. This is from where you have been living your life. You will find it absolutely insane. It is good that we don't have windows in the head. Otherwise, other people will look inside and they will be surprised. They will not be able to believe that this is you. You also will not be able to believe that this is what is your mind. But this is the reality. People never look inside. In fact, as if unconsciously, they suspect that if they look inside, they will find insanity there. It is better not to look avoid. Keep the mind in the dark, and you remain occupied with something in the outside world. People keep themselves busy without business for the simple reason that it helps them not to look in. They have become alienated with their own minds. If you look in the beginning, of course, it is going to be a chaos. But if you start watching the chaos, slowly, slowly things start settling. And you will be able to see what are the causes and what are the effects. Once you have known the causes, you are on the right track. Many people are fighting with the effects. You can never win. You are bound to lose. Effects are only symptoms. You cannot fight with anger because it is only an effect. The cause is ego. You cannot fight with cause also, unless you find that this is the ultimate cause. Anger is an effect. For anger, ego is the cause. But if you go deep down, watching your ego, you will be surprised. It is also, in its own turn, an effect. An effect of unawareness. Unawareness is the cause. You can go on from anywhere, from greed, from lust, from anger, from jealousy, from possessiveness, and you will always come to the ultimate cause, unawareness. So the only way to get rid of this mess, this chaos, is to be aware. And once you are aware, you need not repress anything. You need not even drop. They start dropping on their own. They start disappearing on their own. That's what Buddha means when he says, let go of anger. Let go of pride. When you are bound by nothing, you go beyond sorrow. And these are the two things which are keeping you tethered in an insane state. These are the two things which are creating all your sorrow and misery. Ego, hidden behind, goes on working, poisoning you. Anger is either expressed, then it poisons your relationships with people, or it is repressed, then it poisons your own being. And slowly, slowly you find yourself in such a state that many people would like to die. Many people contemplate suicide for the simple reason that life is so painful that death seems to be a relief. Millions of people around the earth contemplate suicide. Many of them try. Many of them succeed too. And those who don't contemplate of suicide, they contemplate of murder. They think as if others are creating their trouble, so destroy others. Either they want to destroy others or they want to destroy themselves, because they find no joy in life. When you don't find joy in life, when you are not blissful, you become destructive. Either sadist or masochist. When your life is full of joy, unbounded joy, it is creative. Then great creativity is born in you. Then you do something to contribute to the evolution of humanity, to the evolution of the whole universe. You add some beauty to it. You share your celebration with it. You make at least few flowers to bloom. You leave the world in great contentment, because creativity brings contentment. You leave this world joyously, because it has been such a beautiful opportunity to grow, to mature, to become aware. It has been such a joy to create few things and share those things with people. Otherwise, you live in sorrow and you die in sorrow. Anger is like a chariot carrying widely. He who curbs his anger is the true charioteer. Others merely hold the reins. If you look at people or at yourself, you will find it that anger is as if it is a chariot without a driver. Just the other day I was reading a book. A man has lived in the desert, and he writes many experiences in the desert. One experiment he tried. There were no roads, there were no people, no trees, no rocks, no hills, just a desert spread for thousands of miles. And for centuries it has been so unfertile, it has become hard. It is not a sand desert. The crust is very hard. He was driving his car. Suddenly, a whimsical idea arose in him. He moved to the next seat of the driver. He was the only one. He left the driver's seat and let the car run by its own, because there is no road, no people. There is no fear of an accident. The car started moving. It was a rare experience. Then he jumped out of the car. Greater ideas came to his mind. And the car was still going on. Then he ran after the car, jumped again in, took his bicycle out, went exactly opposite to the car on his bicycle, till the car were just a speck far away on the horizon. Still it was moving, going nowhere, still going. Then he again bicycled towards the car. It was strange. He writes, it was thrilling that the car is still moving, going nowhere. Reading his notes, I suddenly remembered Buddha's sutra. Anger is like a chariot careering wildly. He who curbs his anger is the true charioteer. Others merely hold the reins. They may not even be holding the reins. They may be simply sitting there. The car is running on its own. Your body is running on its own. Your mind is running on its own. You are not needed at all. You can jump out of the window, take your bicycle, go against the car, and still it will be moving. And one day you can come back to meet yourself. Yes, this has been tried. People down the ages have tried out of the body experiences. They are exactly the same. You can try it. If you go a little deeper into meditation, one day you can find a way how to get out of the body. Run in the room. Even running is not needed. You can float in the air. Look at the body down, lying there, sleeping, snoring. You can listen to the snoring. Everything is functioning perfectly well. The engine is humming. You can come close to the heart and listen to the beat. The body is breathing. You are not needed at all. You can escape from the window, go around the neighborhood, come back. You are still fast asleep. Enter into the body. It makes no difference, as if the body does not care much whether you are in or out. The body is a very complicated, subtle mechanism. It is automatic. It does not need you. You have not done anything. That's why you are not needed. If you become a real charioteer, then you will be needed. If you are a meditator, you will be needed. Then the body cannot do few things. It cannot meditate on its own. That is impossible. It can snore, it can sleep on its own, but it cannot be aware on its own. For awareness you are needed. Remember it. Only that thing is worth doing for which you are needed. Things which can be done without you are non-essential things. To devote your whole life to them is to miss the whole point. Take me to the railway station, said the drunk, stumbling into a waiting taxi. Look, Matt, we are at the railway station, said the cabbie. Thanks, murmured the drunk, holding over a $5 note, and next time don't drive so bloody fast. The taxi had not moved even an inch. Your life may remain exactly where you were born. It may not move even an inch. Millions die exactly as they are born. No growth happens. no flowering comes to their life. Whether they are not, simply makes no difference. They come and go like shadows. Their life is not worth calling life. They simply vegetate. A farmer munching on a cookie was watching a big rooster chasing a hen and gaining ground at every lap. The farmer threw a piece of cookie in front of the racing pair. The rooster came to a sliding stop and gobbled up the tidbit. "Gosh," said the farmer, "I hope I never get that hungry." But the rooster, the lion, the tiger, the dog, the cat, and you are not in any way different. Unless something of Buddhahood starts arising in you. The rooster is dominated by his hunger, by his lust. So are you. B.F. Skinner, the modern prophet of behavioristic school of psychology, says that man is a machine, and about 99.9 people, he is correct. George Gurdjieff used to say man is a machine, and he was not a behaviorist psychologist. He was one of the greatest spiritual giants who has ever walked on the earth. But still he used to say that everybody has not got a soul. It is very rarely that a person has a soul. And I can understand B.F. Skinner. It is impossible for him to come across a Buddha and to study Buddha. He studied rats and you. And he finds no difference. The same instincts possess the rat, and the same instincts possess the man. Of course, man is a little more complicated, true. A more complicated machine, that's all. A computer. One day I was reading a fictitious story about futures, when scientists have been able to make mechanical men, robots. They look exactly like men, except that they have no soul. But from the outside, you can't make any difference. They talk, they make love, they eat, they get tired and they go to sleep. And if you meet a robot who exactly looks like a man, how you are going to judge that he is a robot, whether he is a robot? You are holding the hand of a robot or a man. Only once in a while you will be able to know when the battery runs down and the robot starts grr, grr, grr. Otherwise there is no difference. You are making love to the robot and robot says grrr, grrr, grrr. Then suddenly you become aware that this is not a man. But up to now he was perfectly right. He was talking great poetry, discussing great ideas, philosophy, quoting Socrates and Aristotle. And he was hugging you and telling you, I love you and I will love you forever. And these are all recorded things. That he has been telling to every woman he meets. Just the moment he sees a woman, something triggers in him and he starts talking poetry and that I love you and I will die without you. I have heard a psychoanalyst was very much puzzled. He was in love with a woman. But the woman was a little strange. Whenever he will say to her, I love you, she will look down. He asked her, what is the matter? Whenever I say, I love you, are you feeling ashamed, embarrassed or what? Why you start looking down? She said, I look down to see whether really you mean it. Because your mind, I can't trust. I can only trust your body. It is very difficult to lie through the body. One can learn it. Actors do that. But very few are actors. Otherwise it is very difficult art to make the body lie. The mind is perfectly at ease in lying. It can say things which it doesn't mean. But the body is still far more authentic, far more truer. What irony that the body seems to be more authentic and your mind seems to be simply a fraud. You can attain to the soul only by becoming more watchful of all that is happening in your body and in your mind. Unless and until the witness arises in you, you are a robot. Sila has written a question to me that, Bhagwan, when I go away from you, I am such a rat. But when I come to you, I become just a mouse. I know what she means. People think there is much difference between rats and mouse. There is not much. The mouse is just a sophisticated rat. College educated. A hypocrite. The rat is far more authentic. The rat is whatsoever he is. The mouse has a facet. But there is not much difference between the rat and the mouse. There is not much difference between the mouse and the man. And there is not much difference between man and the machine. The difference arises only. The difference that makes the difference is meditation. Never before it you can have any difference. All differences are only formal. That's why psychologists study rats, particularly white rats. because they are simple people. And it is easier to understand them. Once you have understood the mind of the rat, you have understood the mind of man too. They infer all their knowledge about man through studying rats. It is really a condemnation of man that rats supply information about you. And that information works. It is perfectly applicable to you. You behave in the same way. That information will not be applicable to a Buddha, to a Jesus, to a Krishna. But where B.F. Skinner is going to find a Buddha? And even if he can find a Buddha, who is going to study whom? Buddha will study Skinner, not vice versa. Skinner will not be able to study a Buddha. He will not have the right context. He knows only how to study rats. A Buddha will be absolutely incomprehensible to him. And when something is incomprehensible, the ego simply denies it. That is ego's way to protect itself. The incomprehensible, the mysterious has to be denied, overlooked, bypassed. One does not take note of the incomprehensible, because to take note of the incomprehensible means you are taking note of the limitation of your mind, and that hurts the ego. Hence Buddhas are born once in a while, but nobody takes note of them. That is the difference between the Eastern and the Western psychology. The Western psychology is based on the understanding of rats. The Eastern psychology is not based on the understanding of rats or even on the understanding of man. The Eastern psychology is rooted in the psychology of the Buddhas. We think from the highest and then we come downwards. First we think of the ultimate, and from there we infer about those who are on lower rungs. It is respectful. Trying to observe the lowest and inferring about the higher is humiliating. It is ugly. And it is going to be wrong. It is like studying a seed and inferring about a flower. Now, studying a seed, how can you infer about a flower? You can dissect the seed. You can look into it. You will not find any color. And you will not find any beauty. And you will not find any fragrance. Although it contains all, but they are still in the unmanifest. And if you decide by the seed about the flower, and you say that the flowers don't have any fragrance, can't have, because when it is not in the seed, how it can be in the flower? And the flowers are not beautiful because the seed is not beautiful. And everything has to be reduced to the lowest denominator. Then the flower has to be simply denied, that it is just poetic imagination and nothing else. That's what has been done about Buddhas. The materialists go on denying their existence. They say it is poetic imagination. Such people have not existed, cannot exist. It is impossible for them to exist because the seed does not show any sign of them. The psychology of the Buddhas starts from the other extreme. It starts from the highest. It studies the flower and then infers about the seed. Because the flower has fragrance, it says the seed must have it. Unmanifest it is. The flower is beautiful, the seed must have beauty in it, covered, hidden. The flower has color, the seed must have it, just waiting for its right time, for the spring, to explode into color, into fragrance, into beauty. Now this is the right way to understand man. Not through rats, not through even ordinary men, but through Buddhas. This is the difference between the Eastern and the Western approach. Western approach has reduced man to a very ugly phenomenon. The Eastern psychology has raised man to the height of the gods. And then the very process of both the psychologies becomes different. Western psychology goes through analysis, thinking. That is its method. Eastern psychology follows the method of no mind, of meditation, not of analysis, not of thinking, but of silence. Because to see the beauty of the flower, you need silence, not analysis. Beauty can never be understood through analysis. The dance of the flower in the wind, in the sun, in the rain, cannot be understood only by the head. The heart has to be open for it. With gentleness overcome anger. This sutra is also tremendously important. Now Buddha is saying anger contains energy. You cannot simply throw it away. It is your energy. Throwing it away will make you weak. Energies are not to be thrown away, but to be transformed. With gentleness overcome anger. Let your anger be transformed into gentleness. With generosity overcome meanness. With truth overcome deceit. He is saying that meditation is an alchemical process. It is not morality, it is alchemy. It is the science of the soul. Through meditation, anger slowly disappears and its energy becomes available and becomes gentleness. You will be surprised to know that if you suffer from great anger, you have great potential for gentleness. Anger simply shows that you have great energy. A man without anger is impotent. He has no energy. A man who cannot be angry cannot be gentle either. with generosity overcome meanness. Don't repress meanness. Don't destroy meanness. But with generosity, transform it into generous consciousness, into sharing. With truth overcome deceit. Don't fight with darkness, bring light in. That is the essence of this sutra. Don't fight with the negative, bring the positive in. And the positive comes through watchfulness. And the negative is already there. Your society prepares you for the negative. Your society needs you to be negative. Your society wants you to be angry, full of anger, so you can be forced into war, into crusades, religious, political, ideological conflicts. So you can be manipulated into killing people. Or you can be manipulated to become martyrs, destructive to yourself. Millions of Christians have died, Mohammedans have died, killing each other for the simple reason that so much anger is repressed, it needs some outlet. You will be surprised to know that Buddhism is the only religion in the world which has not shed blood. The only religion in the world which has converted millions of people without coercion of any kind. Christianity has converted thousands of people, but with coercion. In the beginning, it was the souls. Mohammedans have converted millions of people, but it is through the souls, forcibly, violently. This is not conversion. This is something absolutely ugly and irreligious. Now, the sword is no more used, because to use the sword directly will be condemned all over the world. So subtle means of coercion are used. In poor countries, you can go with bread and butter, with clothes, with better facilities for life, and you can convert people. Now Christian missionaries are doing all over the world that, particularly in the poor countries. It is not a conversion to Christ. It is not at all a conversion. It is simply purchasing people with bread and butter. People are starving. Whosoever can give them food, they are ready to go with him. Buddhism is the only religion in the world who has really converted people without the sword, without bread and butter, without any coercion, positive or negative, who has simply converted through its understanding of people, bringing them more light, bringing them more understanding of their minds, their bodies. And this is of great importance. Never fight with the negative. Your society prepares you for the negative. Transform the negative in the positive. Transformation is possible.
The medium that has to be used is meditation. Just become more watchful of all your mind things, anger, greed, meanness. Otherwise, you can cultivate, you can deceive others and you can deceive yourself, but you will remain mean. A miser can donate, give in charity, but he is giving with calculation. His miserliness is there. Now he is opening a bank account in the other world. He wants to have a bank balance there too. A blind man was standing in a bus queue when his neighbor was startled to see a dog calmly cock his leg and piss all down the blind man's trousers. When the blind man realized what was happening, he put his hand into his pocket and produced a bar of chocolate that he held downwards for the dog. "That's a very charitable thing to do," said his neighbor. "Ah," replied the blind man, "I'm just finding out where his mouth is, so I can kick him in the balls." So don't be deceived by what people are doing on the outside. Deep inside, they may be calculating something else. Their act may be generous, but their motive is the real thing that matters. Not the act, but the intention. A man picked up a woman in a bar one night and took her home to his apartment. When they got there, she started to disrobe, but he stopped her, saying, "No, let us just sit here on the couch together, and if you will keep both of your hands on my head while you are here, I will give you $20. The girl thought this a little unusual, but did as he requested. Finally, she could not restrain her curiosity any longer and asked, "But what kind of a thrill do you get out of having my hands on your head?" "No thrill," he answered. "I just get a sense of security knowing that your hands are on my head and not in my pockets. For $20, it is worth it." The people who are miserly will remain miserly. Even in their sharing, if you look deep down, you will find they are trying to bargain something. There is some business hidden. The priests go on telling to people, "If you give to the poor people here, you will get 1,000-fold in the other world." 1,000-fold. It is like lottery. And who would not like to have it? Give a little bit here, and 1,000-fold you will get there. Priests have been cheating people because people are mean, because people are miserly. Otherwise, priests will disappear from the world. If people are really generous, there will be no need for the priests. Nobody can exploit generous people. They give for the sheer joy of giving. They don't think that giving is a means to some end. If you think giving is a means to some end, you miss the whole point. unless giving becomes a joy in itself, you don't know what it is. Speak the truth. Give whatever you can. Never be angry. These three steps will lead you into the presence of the gods. Speak the truth, whatsoever the cost. It is going to cost you much, because the world lives in lies. People are brought up in such a way that truth never crosses their path, and they are forced to believe into something which their society, their church, their state wants them to believe. It is not a question of truth. People love lies because lies are very consoling. And people love lies because others are also believers in the same lies, and you feel part of others. You feel a kind of belonging. You don't feel alone. The man of truth feels alone. A Socrates, a Pythagoras, a Heraclitus find themselves alone, very alone. In this world, if you say the truth and you live the truth, you will have to live alone. You will not find many people who would like to be with you. You will not find great company in the world. You will find few people who are lovers of truth. And you will be always in danger, because your truth will be a dangerous thing for those who live in lies. They will not tolerate you. You will become an unbearable phenomenon for them. They would be bent upon to destroy you. But still, even if life is sacrificed, truth is worth. A moment of truth is more valuable than 100 years life. Because a moment of truth makes you part of eternity, part of God. Speak the truth. Give whatever you can. It is not a question that you have to give the money or you have to give this and that. Whatever you can, whatever you have. If you have a song, sing the song. Share it. If you can dance, dance and share it. Give whatsoever you can. And never be angry, because people may not accept your gift. Don't get angry about that. People may never thank you. They may not feel grateful to you. On the contrary, they may feel offended by you. It has always been so. They are offended by Jesus. They are offended by Buddha. Why? Because those people look so different from the ordinary people, that people become aware of their ordinariness and it hurts. They bring great treasures to share, but it hurts because they have that great treasure and we don't have anything. People will not be thankful to you. In fact, they will never be able to forgive you. They may crucify you. They may stone you to death. Hence Buddha reminds you again, remember, don't expect anything, otherwise anger will be natural. If you expect even gratefulness from people, and they don't show any gratefulness. On the contrary, they show great ungratefulness. You may feel angry. Beware. Your joy is in giving. It is not for you to be worried about whether what you give is accepted or is not accepted, is accepted with gratefulness or is accepted indifferently. You do good to people, they may do bad to you, still don't be angry. Remember, this is how things are. This is how people are. Remembering it will help you not to become enraged. The wise harm no one, but the fools enjoy harming others. And who is wise? Not the one who knows much, but the one who understands much. The wise is not one who has all the scriptures at the tip of his tongue. The wise is one who has seen his own reality, and seeing it has become aware of the universe and its beauty and its intelligence. The wise is one who has seen the wisdom of existence. He is not knowledgeable, but he is absolutely innocent. How he can harm anyone? That's impossible. Because he can't see others as different from himself. He sees the whole as one. Beware of knowledgeable people. Beware of the so-called experienced. They are not wise. Two women were sitting in the doctor's waiting room, comparing notes on their various disorders. "I want a baby more than anything in the world," said the first, "but I guess it is impossible." "I used to feel just the same way," said the second, "but then everything changed. That's why I am here. I am going to have a baby in 3 months. You must tell me what you did." "I went to a faith healer." "But I have tried that. My husband and I went to one for nearly a year, and it didn't help a bit." The other woman smiled and whispered, "Try going alone next time, dearie." The experienced people, the people who have lived life, they appear wise. They are not wise. They are only mature fools. And mature fools are more dangerous than the immature fools. Because the mature fool has all the arguments to support his foolishness. All his experience is at his disposal. The professor of criminal law was concluding his final lecture before the holidays. "Remember, gentlemen, if you have an affair with a girl underage, with or without her consent, it is rape. If you have an affair with a girl of age, without her consent, that is rape. But if you have an affair with a girl of age, with her consent, Merry Christmas." These people are wise in a way. Wise in the ways of the world. They can give you good advice. But they are not wise in the sense Buddha uses the word. they are as foolish as you are. Just a little bit more experienced. And foolishness does not disappear by experience. I am looking for adventure, excitement, beautiful women, cried the young man to his father as he prepared to leave home. Don't try to stop me. I am on my way. Who is trying to stop you? Yelled the father. Take me along. The wise harm no one. They are masters of their bodies. And they go to the boundless country. They go beyond sorrow. As you become a witness, as you become aware, you simply come to know that you are not the body, neither the mind, nor the heart even. You are simply a watcher, different from all that surrounds you. The body is your outermost boundary. The mind, a little inner. The heart is still more inner. But at the innermost core, you are just a consciousness. Knowing this, you become detached from your own body, your mind, your heart. And that detachment brings mastery. Not that you become destructive to the body. You take every care of it. It is a beautiful instrument. It is a great gift of God. But now you know that it is only the house you live in. Just as you take care of your house, you take care of your body. It is the temple. Your consciousness is your reality. You become disidentified. And to be disidentified is to be the master. Those who seek perfection keep watch by day and night till all desires vanish. Buddha expects only one thing from you. Keep watch day and night till all desires vanish. Make your watchfulness so integrated, so powerful, so strong, and so unwavering that it helps all the desires to evaporate, vanish. Desires are not to be dropped, but allowed to evaporate. Let go of anger. Let go of pride. When you are bound by nothing, you go beyond sorrow. Listen, Atula. This is not new. Atula is a disciple of Buddha. Buddha is saying to Atula, listen, Atula. This is not new. It is an old saying. They blame you for being silent. They blame you when you talk too much and when you talk too little. Whatever you do, they blame you. Why suddenly Buddha addresses to Atula? He was addressing to all his sannyasins. Out of nowhere, suddenly he addresses Atula. You may not be able to see the point immediately. Atula may be the one who was not listening, who was hearing but not listening. And when you are in communion with a Buddha, he knows perfectly well who is listening, who is only hearing. This happens here every day. When new people come, it is so clear that they are only hearing, not listening. As you live here a little longer, slowly, slowly you start listening. Listening is a totally different phenomenon than hearing. Hearing is physiological, because you have ears so you can hear. Listening is a deep phenomenon. You listen only when you are in absolute silence. Those who have been here long enough are falling into that silence. Atula must be hearing only, must have been a new disciple. Hence Buddha specifically mentions his name, "Listen, Atula." And this is also possible that Atula was thinking that Buddha is saying something very new, very strange. In fact, what Buddha says is in a way the eternal truth, as ancient as the Himalayas, and in another way it is as fresh as the flower that has blossomed just this morning, as fresh as the dew drops, and as old as the Himalayas. Because all the Buddhas in the past have said the same thing, maybe in different languages, in different expressions, in different ways. There is nothing new under the sun. It is a truth, but only half. The other half is, there is everything new under the sun. Because truth has the capacity to renew itself continuously, to be reborn again and again. So Buddhas always speak the ancient most truth, and yet they speak the most rebellious truth possible. Buddha says, this is not new, Atula. It is an old saying. People are such that they will always find reasons to blame you. They blame you for being silent. If you are silent, they will blame you. Why are you silent? If you are talking too much, they will blame you. Why you talk too much? If you talk too less, they will blame you. Why you talk too less? Whatever you do, they blame you. Because by blaming you, their egos feel satisfied. Nobody looks at his own faults, and everybody is capable to see the faults of others. Not only to see, but to magnify it as much as possible. Mother called upstairs, "Carol Ann, please stop that shouting and screaming. Why can't you play quietly like Tommy? He is not making a sound." "He is not supposed to make a sound," said Carol Ann. "We are playing our family. He is daddy getting home late for dinner, and I am you." It is very simple to see into others' faults, because one wants to see the faults of others. If they are not there, then one invents them. Your ego can live only on feeling superior. So you make every possible use of others' faults to feel superior. Blaming others is nothing but a strategy of the ego to feel superior. Beware of it. The world always finds a way to praise and a way to blame. It always has and it always will. Yes, sometimes it praises too. It praises only when you are helping other people's ego. Then it praises you. For example, if you say to the Hindus that your religion is the greatest religion in the world, they will praise you. How can they praise me? Impossible. Because I am simply saying the truth, that no religion is greater than any other religion. That all religions are in the same trap of the priests. You may call the priest the Shankaracharya, you may call the priest the Pope, it does not matter. All the religions are in the grip of politicians. Hindus and Christians and Mohammedans, they are all no more religions, but just politics, power politics, hidden behind the name of religion. And no religion is greater than the other, superior than the other. In fact, a really religious person is neither Christian nor Hindu nor Mohammedan. He is simply religious. Indians will praise you if you praise India. If you say this is the greatest land in the world, the most spiritual land in the world, then their egos are puffed up. They will praise you. They will blame you to puff their egos. They will praise you if you puff them up. The whole game is of the ego. But he who dares blame the man whom the wise continually praise, whose life is virtuous and wise, who shines like a coin of pure gold. Don't be worried about the praise and the blame of the ordinary masses of the crowd. Yes, if you have to pay attention, then pay attention to the wise. If they say that something is wrong with you, listen carefully, because they are trying to help you. They have no egos to fulfill out of your faults. They are just like mirrors. They reflect your face. If you have an ugly face, don't destroy the mirror. Simply try to change your face. And the wise ones praise too. But they praise not to puff your ego either. In fact, they praise you only when they see that you are becoming a nobody. Their praise sours like flowers on you. When you are becoming a nobody, when you are becoming a nothingness, you are coming closer and closer to the divinity hidden within you. Even the gods praise him. Even Brahma praises him. A person who is praised by the wise, by the enlightened ones, is praised by gods. is praised by the whole universe, by the Creator Himself, by Brahma. Their praise is worth even if a single Buddha smiles at you. It is enough. The whole world may condemn you. Don't be worried about it. If all the blind people of the world gather together and praise your beauty, will you be happy about it? They can't see. They have no eyes to see. You will not be very happy by being praised by the blind. In India we have a saying that the best couple is when the husband is deaf and the wife is blind. So the husband can go on doing whatever he wants, fooling around, and the wife can go on saying whatever she wants. The husband is deaf and the wife is blind. The saying says it happens only very rarely with the blessing of God. It doesn't happen ordinarily. But what is the point of being praised by blind people? They can't see. And why be worried by their condemnation? They can't see either your faults. But a Buddha, an enlightened one, if he praises you, that means he has seen ego disappearing. If he finds fault with you, that simply shows he is trying to help you so you can drop the fault. Beware of the anger of the body. Master the body. Let it serve truth. Anger has three layers. The first layer is the anger of the body. Beware of the anger of the body. You may not have watched it, that the body accumulates anger. That body has its own ways of accumulating anger. When you feel angry, you crush your teeth, you clench your fist. Why? In fact, in the East, there have been devices to help you. Those are temporary helps, but of great value, because they can make you aware of many things. When you feel angry, just crush your teeth, clench your fist, and you will be surprised that as you crush your teeth and clench your fist and just fight with the air, a shadow boxing, and within 5 minutes the anger is gone. Something has happened. Something has been released. Now, postural integration, Rolfing, and methods like that are becoming very much aware that your repressed angers, sexuality, greed, and all kinds of poisons accumulate into the body, into the muscles. By deep massage, those passions can be released. Rolfing is really a great contribution. Deep massage of the body can be of great help. It can make you aware that your body is carrying many things, and your body drives you into things in which you may not have gone if the body was not driving you there. Beware of the anger of the body, Buddha says. Master the body. Let it serve truth. How to master the body? The first thing is to learn relaxation. Buddha taught to his disciples how to relax. In the East, particularly in the science of yoga, there is a special posture, shavasana, death posture. Lie down on the ground as if you are dead. Let the body slowly, slowly die. Start from the feet. In fact, communicate with your body. Tell to the feet, die. Please die. And then go on upwards. A psychoanalyst has told one of his patients that all that you need is relaxation. So from tonight you start relaxing. Start from the feet. Say to your toes, toes, relax. Feet, relax. And go on upwards, talking to each limb. And then finally tell to your mind to relax. The man went home. He was very much thrilled by the idea. The whole day he waited for the night. The night came, he was lying on the bed. He had taken a good hot shower, as the psychiatrist has suggested, was feeling a little relaxed, lying down on the bed. He started. Toes, relax. Feet, relax. Legs, relax. Thighs, relax. And so on and so forth. He was just coming to the mind to say, mind, relax. And his wife came out of the bathroom absolutely naked, ready to go to sleep. And suddenly the man shouted, wake up, everybody, wake up. This won't help. Hence Buddha says, not relax, not go to sleep, because then you can wake up and you can call everybody to wake up. He says, feel dead. Let the body die for the moment, as if you are just a corpse. You cannot do anything. An ant starts crawling on you. You can't do anything. And it is really a great experience to feel like a corpse and the ant crawling on your face, or a mosquito biting, but you can't do anything. You are simply a watcher. It is a rare experience to go through it. Slowly, slowly, you become a master by relaxing your body. The tenser your body is, the more it is a master of you. Beware of the anger of the mouth. And when you have learned how to relax the anger of the body, the rage of the body, then start becoming aware of what you say. Sometimes unconsciously you say words. You were not aware of the implications of the words. You may not have ever thought that it will create such trouble for you. A young man arranged for his fiancée to meet his parents over cocktails at a swanky hotel. After his family left, the girl asked if she had made a good impression on them. "Well, frankly, darling," he said, "my mother told me privately that she found you a little vulgar. But did you tell her that I went to one of the best finishing schools?" she asked. "Yes, of course I did." "And did you tell her of my interest in art and culture?" "Certainly." "And did you tell her how important my family is in the neighborhood?" "Naturally I did," he replied. "Then what is this vulgar crap all about?" the delicate young lady asked. People go on saying things, not really aware what they are saying. In fact, their minds are like gramophone records. They simply repeat. Now science has discovered it. Now they know that holes can be made into your head and electrodes can be put and certain points can be pushed, and a very strange thing happens. For example, an electrode is pushed into your brain at a certain center and you start saying something. For no reason at all, because nobody has asked it. There is no context for it. But you start saying it. Then the electrode is taken out and you stop saying. Again the electrode is pushed in. You start the same thing again. From the very beginning, again the same sentences, the same words. It can be done 100 times. And each time you will do it again, as if the electrode is nothing but a needle on the gramophone record. Your mind is a great recording mechanism. You have recorded all kinds of things, and you go on saying them, thinking that you are saying. That is not true. Unless you are really watchful, you are not saying. Your mind goes on repeating old patterns. And you go on getting into old problems again and again. Beware of the anger of the mouth. Master your words. Let them serve truth. Beware of the anger of the mind. And finally, slowly, first the body, then the word, then the mind. Master your thoughts. Let them serve truth. The wise has mastered body, word, mind. They are the true masters. If you can watch body, mind, and all their functionings, you will become so separate from them that you can master them. You can master something only when you have a distance with it. If you are identified with it, you cannot master it. And Buddha says, one who is master of his own self is the master of the whole existence. He has entered into a different plane of life. You are slaves. He is a master. You are machines. He is a real man. You function unconsciously. He functions consciously. And to function consciously is to go beyond all sorrow, is to go beyond all misery, is to go beyond all anguish, is to go into the beyond. Other religions call that beyond God. Buddha calls it simply the beyond. Prepare for the beyond. Become masters of your own being. Enough for today.